I'm Emily Thede, author of The Last Fenestra, coming in 2022 from Wednesday Books.
And I'm Anna, a teacher and a writer in the query trenches.
You're listening to Basic Pitches, where we...
Two basic pitches...
break down the basics of writing and being a writer.
After like 6 episodes of hearing me say it that way, I'm like, I want to punch my own face in. Maybe this is how I start the episode. Here, we'll test a couple of different ones. Hey, Emily. Is that good?
And no.
Sup. Is that it?
I like our dorky introductions. It makes me feel like we're on a voice message.
It's just a voice message, and then it's less nerve-wracking.
Yeah, and then we send each other voice messages back and forth asking why we aren't just talking on the phone.
Oh, which was the best last night.
Oh my
gosh.
I
was literally laughing so hard, I had to get my inhaler.
Score!
It was so good.
Oh, man. Yeah, no, last night, so funny and yet so not shareable.
No.
As YA authors. Oh, yeah, it's some good stuff, though.
Can't talk about it at all. It will ruin everything. Okay, I can do this.
We are mature publishing professionals.
Absolutely.
We view characters as fictional creations that serve functions in stories.
Yes, for deeper art. Purpose.
And we are excited about television adaptations on a purely authorial level.
I feel like if we don't talk about it, something's wrong with us.
True. That's true.
Maybe it's just me talking about it and you just...
No, you we just play it. We're like. Just talking about it from a purely artistic standpoint.
Purely artistic.
I mean, it looks very visually appealing. The character... characters. We're talking about Shadow and Bone, everybody. We're talking about the trailer just came out yesterday, and it looks like a masterful visual spectacle of well-developed characters. No, it does. This is not sarcasm. We're trying not to be thirsty is what I'm saying.
Listen, I was very excited, like many people across young adult literature, that it was Ben Barnes.
Yes, who is a very wonderful actor.
Because he's a very fantastic.
That's the only reason.
Can we use any of this as the intro?
Yes, it's all going in the episode. It's all going in the episode. Professionals.
We're just... I'm going to get some water because I'm that thirsty. I can't actually drink this water because I'm sick.
We're talking about characters and what makes readers drawn to characters. Oh, see, now I've set us up.
Look at you. You've done it. You're segueing all over the place. That was another quote that you've said that's like my favorite.
Yes, we're here to talk about characters. We Absolutely. Are actually going to talk about characters from an artistic standpoint.
And like in reality, honestly, yes. Like if you look at Shadow and Bone and you look at Six of Crows, the reason why it is done so yes. well and has such a large fan base is truly...
Absolutely.
Characters.
100%.
I'm really
And there are people that are going to watch the TV show for that, but also just because they don't know anything about it, but they can tell that it's got a fantastically gorgeous cast. That's
they
all
are
I'm saying.
Absolutely gorgeous. Yes. Can we just talk about Inej? Oh my.
Oh, stunning.
I'm going to lose my mind.
It's going to be some good stuff. Oh, but that, also, that really actually is a really interesting thing. I've always thought one of the coolest things about like movie writing and TV show writing versus we're just skipping the intro here versus books is that as an author, we are solely responsible for creating those characters. But there is something really, really cool about thinking about creating a character and then sort of handing it over to an actor who is an entirely different form of art that they get to add all these layers to it and they get to put their spin on it. And that is like, I think every author just, that's the coolest thought ever. It's so cool.
Like, I honestly can't imagine if you actually look at some of the cast. Like, this cast, we haven't even seen it. We just watched the trailer. But if you look at them and their Twitter, their social media, they have, like, leaned into this.
Yeah.
And you can kind of see their personality. Mm-hmm. And I'm so excited to see that, like, their little twist to it. Like, I can't imagine what that's like.
Totally. Yeah, I think, you know, as authors, I think there really are some authors that are so kind of married to the idea of the character that they created that they probably would struggle to have to have an actor adjust it or change it to put their own spin on it. But I think – I don't think this is the case here. Like, I think you know, Leigh Bardugo is an absolute goddess of an author. And I think they got such a great cast that I get the sense that she's just really excited to have that collaborative effort. And that is so cool. And just to be able to trust – I don't know. I think as artists, to have, be able to trust another artist to take your work and take it to a different level. I'm not going to say a higher level because I don't think that TV or film is better or worse than books. It's just different. No. And I think the goal should be for it to feel a little different, to have other, you know, cooks in the kitchen. And that's just – it's so cool.
Right. I think it's interesting because already having, you know – if you've read the series and you watch the trailer, they are really leaning in. And this kind of like ties into our character thing because they're really leaning into the fact that she is a map maker, right? She's a nobody. You know, she was just supposed – she's not even a soldier. She's she just makes maps and she can't even do that well, right? Like if you – like the opening chapter, you can't – she's struggling the opening couple of chapters. She struggles with that. And I think the fact that they're really, really leaning into that is – just fascinating and something that I don't feel like, you know, Leigh Bardugo did, right? Because it had to move quickly for young adult literature. Yeah. Like she had to get out of that map maker phase really fast.
But I also think that's part of why YA had such a big boom, you know, 10 years ago or so, is because I think there was more space in YA for characters who started out as ordinary people. Like I think it's such, it's a gateway for readers when you enter with a character who isn't the coolest superhero on the planet. You know, I love those too, but I think there's something really special about a book or a story where the main character feels so realistic and accessible, and then they are put into these truly incredible circumstances. And at that way, at that point, you as the reader are just in it. It's easier to connect when they feel real to you.
Right.
And I think YA just did that so well. I think that was just so many... so many of the books that really kind of broke out started with this idea of like kind of the everyman, although for the most part it was every girl, and letting her have some fantastical adventure, which, you know, obviously had been done in adult science fiction and fantasy as well. But I just think that YA really just kind of like knocked it out of the park with that and built this whole new generation of readers.
Right.
And books. Yay.
And it's so exciting. Yes. There's so much to be excited about right now. Like, oh my gosh.
So much. So many good
And
ones.
I just want to, like, reach to my shelf and, like, pull off things. Like,
that
I just want to hand to Netflix and say,
oh my gosh, yes.
Lee, please. We just.
And I have so, at this point, publishing, everything's a secret. But the, I have a couple friends now who have announced TV film adaptations, which I'm super excited about. And I have a couple others that are maybe working towards it. And yeah, I think that this is a golden time for TV and film, especially like streaming adaptations.
Right.
And I am here for it. Even if it's not my book. But if you want it to be my book, Netflix, call me. Someone pointed out to me, it would not be that expensive. It wouldn't. Because the setting's there. Just pick an island. Just pick an island. Then do a lot of filming on the Amalfi Coast. The magic's pretty chill until the end. Not chill, but it's not like super visual.
Right.
And then it's not light. All you need is one really big budget final climactic battle, which would crush it and cost a lot of money. But the rest of it would be, you know, you could do something visually stunning without having to spend too much money on special effects. All I'm saying. Because it's so character-based. Hey, segue.
I'm going to ask. Oh, look at you going. I was actually not going to segue yet. Okay, so we have a listener question from Jill. Let's go ahead and listen to that.
I see posts by authors and agents and illustrators, and they say that the one of the best ways to support authors and illustrators is to write a review. What should a review look like?
Emily, that is such a good question and such a detailed question. I know you had some thoughts. What are some thoughts that you have?
Yeah. So I think the interesting thing here is really that this is one of those situations where you don't have to worry too much about doing it right because it's often an algorithm thing. You know, so leaving a review serves multiple functions. You know, one, of course, is so that other people who read that review who would like that book will know to read it. But a lot of times when authors say, you know, please, could you leave a review? What they're really actually asking is just leave a review, because then the algorithm just boosts your book in different ways. Like I know, especially on certain websites like Amazon, once you hit a certain number of reviews, I think it's like 50, then your book just shows up sooner in searches for that type of book. So there's a very like kind of dry, boring reason why reviews are helpful, even if the review is just, I liked this book. Now, obviously, if you really enjoyed a book and you would like to do everything you can to help readers find it and to help promote that book, a more detailed review is great for that. But if you're really just, like, you have 10 books that you've read and you like them all and you have 5 minutes to just go on and, you know, click that 5-star, right? Great book, funny book, whatever, like that, you've done something for that author and they will appreciate it. But if you're going to leave a detailed review, I always think of what are the things that you look for as a reader that resonated with you about that book. Because when I'm trying to decide what book to read and I read reviews, there are certain words that always catch my attention. You know, if someone says that the writing is beautiful or the world building is immersive or the banter is great or it's funny or there's an enemies to lovers romance or, you know, those are all just like kind of my trigger words where I go, ooh, this looks like a book that could be for me. So if you just think about what is it that you liked about a book, put a couple of those things in the review, then you're going to help other readers who would enjoy it find it.
Absolutely. I think the thing is the mentioning things that attracted you to the book, things that you think will attract other people. I think if you have the time to give, you know, a written review, naming those things and saying, oh, it was such a wonderful enemies to lovers. It was such a wonderful competition style book. It's such a wonderful, you know, whatever the thing is that catches your attention that you think will catch other people, that's the best way to, I think, to get other people to say, ooh, totally, that's right up my alley.
And almost like comps in a way too, which obviously we're not asking people to come up with comps, but if you read a book and you're like, oh, I loved this, some of the, you know, whatever reminded me of books by this other author that I love, you know, then people who love that author are going to see that review and go, oh, okay, I also love that other author or that other book, so I should check this one out. That's always great. If that comes to mind naturally. Obviously, don't feel like you have to, like, research comps to read a review. You don't. But if you're thinking, you know, I love this book because it had X, Y, and Z that I also loved in this other book, that's great.
Yeah. And like you said, Emily, I think it's the number of reviews, too. Yeah. Like, it really – you know, and I will speak as a reader, and I don't know what this says about me, but, like, when I'm looking for a book or when I'm looking for – like, think of any product that you want to buy. And I know that sounds callous, but, like, you look for one that product, has the highest review and the highest number of reviews. So if it's a 5-star thing and it only has one review, but, like, that number of reviews, even if you just have time to, like – click that 5-star thing if you like it. Even that is just super effective.
Oh, totally. I mean, like, that's, you know, a big reason why we ask people to add our book on Goodreads is because, one, they'll get updates when that book comes out, things like that. But also just, you know, it's a self-perpetuating cycle of the more people that are interested in a book, the more people who express interest in a book, the more people who read a book and like a book, the more other people are tempted to check it out. And so, you know, it's just generating a little buzz.
And I brought this up earlier and Emily gave me some advice on, like, not advice, but, like, helped me, like, kind of phrase it. Unless you are a book reviewer, unless you are a book blogger, like, this is a thing that you do. If you actually read somebody's book or see their art and you're like, meh, when you read it,
you don't have to leave a review for that book.
You don't have to leave a review. Please don't leave a review.
I mean, obviously, you can. Like, like, if you're someone who really wants, you know, to leave honest reviews on every book you read, go on with your bad self. Please don't tag the author. But if you're thinking, oh, well, authors say I should leave a review and I hated this book, but they told me I should leave a review, they might not be asking you to leave a review. So it's up to you. You can walk on past that one if you want to. Because by the time this episode comes out, it's quite possible that some very, very early copies of The Last Fenestra might be drifting out into the world. So this feels like my blood pressure is going up. No, I'm excited. No. I'm really excited. No, I'm really excited. Maybe that shows that I am naive, but I'm just really excited for people to read it.
I'm excited because it's such a good book and I'm excited and everybody should add it on Goodreads. Add it on Goodreads. Oh, you all, that means we cut out my chicken with a knife thing. Oh, we did. Sorry.
It's all right.
If I come at you very threateningly with add it on Goodreads, just imagine the little chicken holding a knife.
Well, yes.
That meme.
We're trying to sound threatening, but we're not really threatening. We love you. If you don't add it on Goodreads, we just would love it if you do.
Yes. Also, rate this podcast. Rate and review.
Yeah, that too.
I know that's supposed to come at the end of the episode.
Now it's just a commercial for ourselves. Yeah.
What's up?
Welcome to the podcast. Great question. Thanks that for being a great our question. First
Thank you,
question.
Jill. Thanks, Jill. If you guys want to ask us more questions, you can go to our anchor link. It's always in our Twitter. You can find it, and you know, you can follow it back to the anchor from wherever you're listening to this podcast. And you can just ask us a question. And then we'll also include our email in the end. So you can email us questions if you have them. So if there's topics you want us to cover, if there's like writerly or readerly questions that you want, you can ask them and we'll answer them.
Totally.
The best that we can. Yes. With whatever advice we
have. Hey, we have lots of advice. Whether it's good, remains to be seen. But we have lots of advice.
We'll see if this episode about character arcs
ever really gets started. character arcs. But the point is, we're drawn... most readers, a lot of readers, I don't know what percentage of readers, a good chunk of readers are drawn to books because of characters. So we're going to talk a little bit about kind of what makes a compelling character, what draws us into characters, and what those characters do in the story in terms of character development and character arc.
Absolutely. I've been noticing it a lot lately. It's hard when you're in writing mode, I think, writing and revising. So I'm like deep in revision. So I'm really looking at character arcs. And it's really hard for me to consume any media right now because in the back of my brain, I just have this running critique of like,
oh my gosh, yes.
I do this all the time. It never stops. I can't turn it off. And it's like, this is not done well. This is, ooh, they could have done this. We watched a movie recently and Stephen was really enjoying it, but I was sitting there going, they could have done this. I think I know where they're trying to go with this character. They could have done this. They could have shown this. This is not hitting. This doesn't make sense with this. And like, it's really hard to turn that voice off.
Yeah. I watched something recently where I could almost have like pictured the writers writing down like, why is this character a grumpy grump? Okay, it's because of this. Why is this character not trusting? Okay, it's because of this. But instead of like easing it in and dropping clues, it was like one character like out of nowhere was like, I am grumpy because of sad backstory thing. And the other character was like, and I have trouble trusting you because of my thing. And I was like, no, you can't do that. You can't just be having a casual conversation. I mean, you can, but if there hasn't been sufficient lead up to it, it doesn't feel earned.
Right.
And I'm a big believer in kind of dropping clues, but also letting people get to know a character, letting people get to know the character as they are. And then sort of hinting at and revealing slowly what made them the person they are, but not just have them like hand it to readers on a silver platter, because I think that's not as satisfying. You kind of want readers to get to the point where they're like, I wonder what made this character like this before you tell them what made that character like this.
Yeah. And this is kind of funny because I don't do it often, but connecting to my teachery background, I taught a lesson on direct and indirect characterization. And like even at a young age, they are capable. We talked about direct characterization where you like say this person is happy, this person is sad, this person is mean. And even they are like, you don't want a whole book of that because that would be boring. And I was like, okay, why, you know, why does indirect characterization where you reveal these things? And they were like, well, because it's interesting. Like we feel smart figuring it out. And that is such a true thing about writing character is like you want to craft it in such a way that the like your reader is invested in them first and then wants to start learning more about them, wants to start peeling back. Okay, what I noticed that this character has this tendency to do this thing. I wonder why. And you have to get them interested to ask, I wonder why.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I think so much of what I didn't realize I liked about reading until I began trying to recreate it as a writer is letting readers figure things out and also letting them see the progression of a character and as it grows. So I guess to kind of zoom in a little bit, you know, we're talking about character arcs. And for people who don't know, maybe you've just started writing, you know what character is, but you're not really sure about this arc thing. What we're really talking about is the idea that a really satisfying book, and there are always exceptions. So if you're thinking, not in this type of book, okay, we'll loop back to this. But in most stories, especially in YA, the most kind of satisfying books are those where we get to see the main character grow and change throughout the story. Not just throughout the story, but because of the events and the other people in the story. To be able to craft that arc as an author, you need to make sure that you know, and I'm not saying you need to know it before you start, but you need to know it before you finish, where that character is starting as a person, what they want, how they react to circumstances, how they see the world. And then you need to think about how that's going to be different at the end. And then it takes a lot of really careful work to get them there in a way that feels earned and feels authentic. I often tell writers who come to me for advice that one of the things I like to do, and for me, it's usually in sort of that first and second revision, not usually before I draft because I'm just a chaotic drafter, is I like to really like make a list of character traits. And I will write down, you know, selfish, taciturn, doesn't trust people, thinks the world is out to get them. And then without even thinking about the character, I will just look at the words I wrote and then write the absolute opposite of it on the other side of a column. And obviously, characters are not going to go from one thing to being a completely different character. But if I have narrowed in on a few key character traits and then I've thought about, okay, what is the opposite of that? Then at least it gives me a direction. And it makes me think about what is happening in that story. What are the interactions that that character is having that are changing some of their kind of ways of interacting with the world? Because you're not going to make a character who is, you know, an introverted, quiet character into a loud, outgoing character. That's not the point of an arc. It's more about, I think, how characters react in circumstances, how what they expect from other characters. So if you have a character at the beginning who expects people to betray them, who doesn't trust other people, who doesn't offer up information about themselves, is very closed off, those are all great opportunities to craft a character arc where by the end of that story, that character is able to communicate with others, to form relationships or whatever it is that you're working on. So,
and I think that is where I've finally gotten to as a writer is I can look and I can sit down and say, okay, I do have this character. And it was honestly your advice about drafting up words of where they stand at the beginning of the book and then drafting up words of where they end, like where they go at the end of the book. That kind of helps click so many other things in place. Plot, theme, like I know you don't sit down to write a theme, but by the end you should, by the time you're ready to query this book, you should have a theme in there. Like you should have a couple different themes layered in. And that's a place that you can turn to for theme. And I think one of the things in my head is the basic, somebody wanted but so then. Mm-hmm. And I think that, and honestly, I know it's such like a, I don't know, it's, I use it for young writers, but it really starts off with, you have to start off with your somebody. That opening chapter, those opening chapters should be, here's your somebody. Here's what they are. Here's where they stand. Here's their personality. Here's everything you know about them. And then give them a want. And as soon as you give a character a want, you're tied in. You're locked in. You've got your reader locked in. You lock them into this character no matter what their personality is. And then you give them something they want, even something very small. Your reader is going to want to like latch onto these characters.
Totally. That's so much potential for a spinoff because one of my absolute favorite things to do when it comes to like the darkest moment is to give a character what they thought they wanted all along and make it terrible.
It's my favorite.
When a character, they are just convinced, they just know that if they get this one thing, if they accomplish this one thing, that all their problems will be solved. And then you give it to them. But by that point, they've changed so much that that's not what they want anymore. And it's so bittersweet that it hurts so good.
It's so satisfying. I just revised those scenes for my book. And there was a moment, like, you know, the moment where authors are like, I cried so much revising today. I was literally like between cackling and crying. Yep. I was like, ha, 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 you got what you deserve.
Exactly. And I gave you what you wanted. Why aren't you happy now?
Why aren't you just so delighted? Aren't your problems all
solved? So true. But that really does. That kind of brings back to that I think I used to think of a character arc as where they start and where they end. And it really was when I was working on The Last Fenestra. It was actually during my revisions with my agent that I had to get really methodical about this because my agent is a brilliant goddess of plot. And she had great suggestions for how to improve the pacing, make it more fast-paced, add in other subplots and other characters. But in the process of moving things around and trying to move a bunch of events closer, I realized very quickly that I was running into issues because I had sort of instinctively crafted these character arcs. And so much of the character development that I do is interpersonal because I'm a big believer that for the most part, people and characters usually change because of other people and characters. And a lot of that can happen, at least in my books, through banter, through interactions. So I had these two characters and their kind of individual character arcs, but also their relationship arc. And once I started moving plot points around, things fell apart really quickly because that delicate handiwork of crafting the way that they interact with each other at every different stage, suddenly it was out of whack because conversations were in the wrong place. They were happening after events had happened or before events had happened. So I had to sit down with like a chapter by chapter outline and I had to break it into chunks. And I've talked to you about this as well. And really ask myself, like, at this point in the story, what is this character like? How do they respond when people interact with them? And the same thing for the other character. And then in this chunk of the story, you know, like shifting them just a little bit. And then in the next chunk, a little bit more. And I had to make sure that I justified every step of the way. Why has this changed? And a lot of times, the events that changed it are the sort of events that if someone tried to summarize my book, those events wouldn't be in the plot outline because they were these minute shifts or moments of a character realizing something about someone else that allowed them to, you know, lower their guard a little bit or move a little closer to friendship. But I, as the author, I needed to know that if someone, this is never going to happen, but if someone came to me and said, why did this character who was mean two chapters ago start being less mean here, I could say, because this moment right here, this little moment, this look, this tiny little event shifted the way this character sees that character. And that's why in the next scene, it feels different. And I think by doing that really carefully and really strategically, I was able then to craft these character arcs and these relationship arcs in a way that feels really genuine and really earned. At least I think so.
Right. I think it's the question of like, why? Why did this character change? And that's
and it
not
can't
about...
be because as the author, you wanted them to, which a lot of times you're like, I need them to be nicer now. Like I see this a lot in romance arcs of like we love enemies to lovers. I love it because there's so much room for growth. When two characters don't like each other, you have a big fun arc to play with to get them to a place where they love each other. But I think a lot of times when people first start attempting to write these, it's like, okay, I need them to not like each other, and now I need them to like each other, so I'm going to make them like each other. And I'm like, yeah, but why? Why do they like each other now? What has changed? What happened to cause that? And even if readers don't necessarily identify those moments, they sense them, and that's what keeps someone from saying, wait, I don't get it. Why is he being nice now? Like, you need to be able to feel that it's earned.
And you mentioned something beautifully is they are the scenes that do not show in a synopsis. They are the scenes that do not show up in a summary, but they are the scenes that readers will remember.
Yes.
And when you think about any fandom that's built around any book, any movie, any TV show, any whatever, any media, the things that people remember usually aren't like the technical plot side of things. They remember the little funny jokes. Like, I don't know. I have like a Marvel brain going on right now. So like, I'm thinking Marvel movies.
Yes.
Because they do it so well of honing you in on a character and you remember all the jokes. You remember all the like heart-wrenching moments that because those don't come often. You remember the fun scenes of them doing something. Like, everybody remembers, I think, in Ultron, the scene where they're all drinking and trying to lift Thor's hammer.
Yes.
And
also...
That's not in the plot.
No, I think too... This is why in long-running series, especially like TV shows and movies that go through like multiple directors and multiple screenwriters, there are some movies or some episodes that like people get really angry about. And I think it's always because... It's never because of the big plotty moments. It's usually because a character does something that is not right for that character. And if you have been riding along with that character for multiple movies or multiple episodes, and then suddenly they say or do something that you're like, what? They would never do that, or at least they would never do that at this point. It's like, that's the thing that gets the internet like really angry. And I love it. It's also where fan fiction comes from. People don't write fan fiction about the big plotty moments. They write fan fiction about the character dynamics.
Yes.
From what I've seen.
I'm struggling really hard not to mention something that rhymes with Marsh Wars. Jeez. Oh, God. Anybody who knows Star Wars knows exactly. And then they feel the same way that
I
do. They know
exactly what
I'm
people
thinking.
Care enough to get angry, that means that prior to that point, someone's been doing something right. It's also, we were talking about actors putting their spin on characters. It is, in my mind, it is the hardest thing an actor must ever face, and that's probably not true, and actors probably would disagree with me, But the thought of being an actor that invests yourself in a character over multiple projects and then having someone come in and write a line for you that I just picture them going, my character would never say that. They would never say that. But right. They have to say it. And like, oh, like it's just like a knife to the heart. Like it's the
worst. I can't even imagine that. Like, ugh. And I think that's an indicator too of whenever you have a moment as a writer or like revising or your CP says to you, this seems kind of out of place for me. Like this line, that's usually a really good indicator that something along the way, something along the path has not met, right? Yeah. Like you have not had that slow, gradual growth. Like you haven't had those little milestones in between to lead to that line happening.
Yeah, you and I have, I've given you advice and I've had advice from other people, not advice, feedback, where mm-hmm. I love this line. It hasn't earned yet. This character wouldn't say that yet. Like, I want them to say, and it's always tricky because I don't want to say cut it because I don't want you to cut it. It's more just like, I need a couple more breadcrumbs because I want that to feel real. And right. I had moments where I got feedback from someone who just had, a different view of one of my characters than I did and wanted this character to say something. And I was like, no, they could not say that. Like, and it would have served the plot well, but this character would just, they would never have said this thing. And as an author, it was actually kind of gratifying to realize just how firmly I held this. Because someone else would have been like, it's just one line, who cares? Like, it would help, it would serve a function in the story. But I was like, nope, not a chance. It would break the entire character for me to have them say something that is out of character. And that meant to me that I knew that character well enough to really make them feel authentic. Because it viscerally hurt me to think of this character saying a very throwaway line just because it was not right for that character.
And that's why I think
speaking in code. It's like speaking in code because you and I both know which lines we're talking about. Characters.
Yeah. And it makes – I think about lines like that and I'm starting to get into the habit now whenever I'm dreaming up something or I'm getting to a point with a plot – that I have those lines that I want them to say. Like, I dream up those before on the way to work. And it's like, I'll just put that in a doc somewhere. And then hopefully I can find this line is something that can be said once they've reached this relationship. Yes. And this is months and months in advance before even starting a project. You have those lines building.
That's what I'm doing with my sequel right now. I was trying so hard to be the plotty McPlotterson. And I wrote an outline for my agent. We're talking about it because... for those of you who don't know, when you're writing a book under contract versus revising a book that's already sold. So in my case, I wrote a duology. I didn't write both books before selling it. So this is the first time that I am starting from scratch to write a book. It's already been bought. It's the second book it's not a series, it's a duology. So I know the characters, I know the world, but again, there is still a lot of work to do in terms of character growth. And I was trying really hard to be what I thought a responsible writer was and write in order and I outlined. And then I was like, no, and I couldn't get into it. And this past week, I finally said, no, I'm just going to write all those moments. I'm going to write all those scenes. I'm going to write, like you said, those little lines and those interactions that dance around in my head for months. I'm just going to get them all down, even if I don't know where they fit, because I will find the place for it. And I'm trying to get better at not trying to visualize the whole, just writing the dialogue, because I know that once I figure out where it belongs, I'm just going to have to scrap all the rest of it anyway. But so that's all I've done this week. I've just written those moments, those lines, those interactions that you're like, oh, that's going to be really fun. And now it's my job to make sure that it pays off.
Pays off is such a big nebulous idea, because every time somebody says, we haven't earned this yet, or this doesn't pay off yet, like that, because there's so much you have to do to get there.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that I think it's worth us kind of looking at, like taking a microscope to and saying, okay, like how do you do that? And I'm particularly thinking of the dreaded first chapter.
Oh gosh, yes.
I don't want to dive too deep into it, but
first chapter.
I mean, I think it's important to what is your baseline? Mm-hmm. And then how do you get from this baseline to maybe a midpoint? How do you make that character growth?
Part of it for me, honestly, is that I always assume I'm going to have to go back and redo my opening chapter once I finish the book, because when I start it, I don't know exactly what that character arc is going to look like. I don't know all those little important, hugely important, but tiny moments that are going to shape them. And so I want to then kind of reverse engineer that character to where they need to be in the beginning to make sure they are kind of the truest version of themselves at that point that feels the most distinct from the final version. Right. And again, I'm not talking about making a character a different person. There are certain traits that should not change because people do not turn into different people. But when it comes to really, again, it always, for me, it always comes down to how they interact with other people, how they expect to be treated, how they treat people, how they interpret things that are said to them, how they respond. And the, you know, the core of that character, what they want, what they deeply desire, what it is that they're trying to accomplish with their life, with whatever, those things can stay constant, but maybe how they get them or how they view people around them as they get there is what shifts and changes so beautifully.
Yes.
I saw
I'm sorry.
This is kind of a tangent, but someone was talking the other day about like your favorite lines in a book. And I realize that sometimes I struggle with this because I have lines that I love in my book that are, you know, that are well written or whatever. But the lines I love the most don't work out of context. They're fine. But most of my favorite lines are dialogue. And some of the lines of dialogue that I think punch people in the feelings only work when you've read it, when you know why that particular line is so significant. Otherwise, yes. It's like, okay, so-and-so said something and that's nice or that's mean or whatever. But it's not until you've built that arc that they're like, oh, no, that was the worst thing they could have said, or that was the most perfect thing they could have said, because you've laid the groundwork.
Right. I just thought of, because I was going back to our previous conversation about, you know, the Shadow and Bone trailer dropped, right? But I think of the line from Inej to Kaz at the end, where she says, "I will have you, Kaz Brekker, with no armor," or "I will have you not at all," like "I won't have you at all," whatever that quote is. I'm sure.
Ooh, I got chills.
I know. And like, if you know, if you've read that book, you're like,
yeah. If you know, you
like,
know.
There's so many things happening there. It's, I mean, if you look at those characters, it's a power play for her to tell him that.
Yeah.
Because he controls everything in his life. And I don't know, once you know those things about them, you realize how far a character has come. Because Inej, in the beginning of that book, would never have said that. Like, she would have not that she was meek or mild in any regard, but there, she was never that confident to talk to him that way. I don't know. It's just interesting. Like, it's fascinating to look at that. And I think establishing, if you use that line, go back to the beginning, the opening is her not knowing the plan, not questioning the plan, her getting a little upset that he didn't, like, you know, share the plan with her, but then rolling with the punches anyway. So thinking in those increments of where they started versus where you ultimately want them to go, because you are the author, you are in control. You just have to do the groundwork to get it there.
Yeah. If you can look at the kind of significant conversations or dialogue bits near the end of your book and ask yourself, would this conversation fit if I moved it, like forgetting the actual context of what they're talking about, but would the way that they talk to each other or the way that they interact, would it work fine in chapter two? And if it would, then maybe there is a place there for you to do more work because, you know, I guess what I'm saying is if you've done your job really well, those really powerful conversations or interactions or lines that happen in the end of the book would not work in the beginning of the book because those characters are not – those characters were not the people who would say those things to each other.
Yes.
And yeah, and that's so rewarding as a reader because you feel like you – understand why they've changed and why they're interacting that way. And I guess for me, it really, it always just comes back to characters interacting with each other. But, but that's not the only form of character. I mean, you can have a character arc in a book that only has one character. It's going to require a different kind of work, but you can. And I think it's almost, I can't pick those two apart. I can talk about my main character's character arc. I can talk about my secondary character's character arcs, but I'm always going to get tangled up in how they get tangled up because for me, that's how my characters grow and change is because of the people that they bump into along the way. And that's my favorite part. I love that. So I love banter.
Yeah.
Banter is so fun because banter means something different at each phase of the book because it's the same lines, would feel different in the beginning and the end because of the way those characters view each other.
Right. So fun. Because you even gave me advice on, there's a character that shows up in the beginning. He's in chapter one, and mine is dual point of view. So he shows up in one of the characters, like, all of her chapters for several chapters in a row. And then he's kind of gone throughout the rest of the book. And then he shows up at the end. And you gave the advice of using that character to show how my main character has changed and have a scene in there. And I had had it in my original draft. And then I took it out for revisions. And you were like, but what if there was a scene in there? And I'm like, damn it.
See, isn't like, that funny though? Because it means that as a reader, I was like, there's some, I need something here. And you you knew that at one point, and you just needed permission to put it back in there.
Right. And the, like, just for an example, I know my book is like just a, you know, work in progress, but in the first chapter, she kind of goes along with whatever plan he has in mind because she's very neat. Like, she needs him. She needs somebody. She's very lonely. Mm-hmm. She doesn't want to be alone. And she's kind of loyal. She's very, very loyal to him. And at a certain point, that kind of breaks. And at the end, she's very much like, I don't need this person, and very much ready to push them out. And there is no middle point of her, like, showing as a marker, here's how she responded to him when he approached her in the first chapter. Here's how she's responding to him in the middle chapter, where it's like, I don't know. I still am kind of feely, but I'm also, like, done with you. And then by the end, it's like, no, I'm my own person, and I don't need you anymore. But we can work together. We can be partner. Like, showing those changes naturally.
And I think also you said something earlier about midpoints. For me, in a lot of ways, I often see midpoints as a place where things happen that send one or both characters back to – they retreat back into their original self. And I remember – this is one of those things. I remember reading Beat Sheets. I remember reading this stuff when I was a newer writer and being like, I do not understand what they're talking about. So if you are listening to this right now and you're like, I don't understand what they're talking about, it's okay. You will. It just – it's the sort of thing you almost have to play with so long that things start to click. And so for me, when you get to know a really strong sense of who a character is at the beginning of a story, and then things happen and they start to change, maybe they start to open up, maybe they start to get braver, maybe they start to get more empathetic or more caring or whatever it is, and those big twists, those midpoint turns, those darkest moments, a lot of times they cause characters, just like, you know, traumatic circumstances do for people, we reflexively pull back to what is safe and comfortable for us. And I think that packs a really strong emotional punch, because as a reader, you're cheering for this character to grow and change, and then something happens and you can feel them just pulling back into themselves, like, nope, 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 I tried to be the different person and I got hurt, or I got scared, or I'm afraid of losing something, and they pull back. And those, it's not that they are pulling a U-turn and going back to who they were and they're going to stay there. It's more just that there are these moments where they're moving towards who they're going to be, and then there are other moments where they pull a quick on reversal and something needs to get them back on track. Right. And I love those moments. I love those moments.
Yeah.
And it's funny too, because sometimes people might say, if it's not earned yet, if you haven't done the work yet, they might go, wait, why is so-and-so being mean again? Or why did they say that harsh thing? But if you lay the groundwork enough, if you really know that character in the beginning, then I think readers understand why this character reverted.
Right.
And it hurts. It hurts. It's another one of those hurt so good moments. So
right. I also think of the midpoint as, and specifically in my book, it's not that anybody, I think there's a lot of that slow growth, especially from one of the characters. It's a lot of slow growth. And he does, like, a lot of reverting.
Yes.
Right? Oh, he kind of gives a little and then reverts a little. Yep. Gives a little and then reverts a little. And I also sometimes think of the midpoint not as a reversion. Like, for them, it's not reverting. It's changing direction. Mm-hmm. So I really wanted to play with this idea of, you know, the whole thing of, like, pushing a character to be – like, one character is pushing the other one to do something terrible and be evil, right? To just be a villain. And it's like, you do the bad thing. Be bad. It's fine. It's great. Yeah. It'll be fine. And then that midpoint is where she kind of, like, makes that turn.
Yeah.
A little bit. Yeah. Just a little bit in her own way. So, like, she's not going back to – if anything, she is discovering her confidence and her power. And, like, not, like, magic power, but, like, her power as a person. And this is doing it the bad way.
Yeah.
Right? This is the, oh no, we're going to still get to the end.
You're just like, good, be confident, take action. No, not that action. Oh no, no, not, no, not that.
That action is not good. What are you doing? Yeah.
Turn around.
Think of it. Yeah. Turn around. You turn. And by the end of the book, one of the characters is like, uh-oh. Yeah. And there's just that, oh no.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. Oh, it's this conversation would sound so different after our books were out. Do what? Once our books were both out and people could read them, we this conversation. Yeah. People are years from now, people are going to be like, oh, now I know what character they're talking about.
Now I know the oh no moment.
Yes. Yep, I know, because I keep thinking.
Now I know the not that action.
Trying to write a sequel while also not talking about any details of the sequel because it would give away stuff from book one is so hard. But yeah, right. I'm playing a lot with characters, finding their place in the world and having to kind of readjust, you know, what do they want? What do you want? And then when you get it, does that jeopardize other things you want? And it's really fun. But yeah.
I love it. I love sequels. A lot. Like, I know it's really hard to write them for this reason. I can't imagine. Like, I get it. It's so hard. But I think we love it because it almost feels, and this is a bold statement. Maybe it is a bold statement. I don't know. I feel like sometimes sequels, especially in duologies, are just like fan fiction of the original book. Because then it's like, okay, they got what they wanted in book one in some form or capacity. Now where else can I take them?
I could see that.
Now we're going on a road trip and it's going to be great. How do they react on a road trip?
But they, you know, I won't know. One thing that is not a spoiler is that I, like you said, kind of the fan fiction, there were characters in book one that I remember at one point being like, oh, man, like I kind of want those two characters to have something going on. And then I had this moment where I thought, wait a second. They're my characters. I don't have to write fanfic shipping two of my characters. This is my book. I can write, So I get to do a lot of stuff with secondary characters, which also kind of fills in some things that are necessary.
I think, like, yeah, to help, secondary characters are also a way to, like, create character arc. I'm just trying to, like, help
to create character arcs, to add tension, there are a lot of things that I think can be missing in sequels if you're not careful. And I do have some very clever tricks to make sure that those are not an issue in book two, but I also am using secondary characters to provide a lot of the stuff that you just can't have, you know, because if you're wrapping things up to certain extent in a book one, there are certain like introductory, like I love characters getting to know each other. I love characters bumping into each other and getting on each other's nerves. And to some extent, if you've set up characters so that they have a much stronger relationship than they had in the beginning of book one, you can't just throw them back in the beginning and be like, now you don't know each other again. You know, like that doesn't work. But I personally I love that element of banter in relationships. So being able to kind of bring in some of the secondary characters and let them do some of the lifting of that dialogue, of that banter, of that push and that pull has been so much fun.
Right? I'm so excited.
I'm pretty confident that if people do write fanfic of secondary characters after reading The Last Fenestra, then when book two comes out, they're going to be like, oh, I thought that was my idea. And I'll be like, it was your idea too, but if it's also my idea, here you go. It's also mine. I think readers will be pleased.
I love them so much. I can't wait for character arc of them. I don't know if it's a second episode or not, but I also want to I've had the thought here of – we've been talking a lot about how character influences character arc and how making them, you know, kind of butt heads or travel along or intersect with other characters really pushes it. I keep thinking about people who post on Twitter, and I do this all the time too, and I think sometimes we misconstrue it, is how to get character arc is also to like be mean to your characters. Yes. Like people talk about that quote of being mean. But I think sometimes we misconstrue as being mean as doing just mean things to them. So it's like hurting them physically or, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like they do terrible plot things. And again, I don't know if it's a whole other episode.
Okay, let's do it. Let's see. Yeah. Oh, I think that's fascinating. And I agree with you. Yes. I used to think it just meant like killing off characters or wounding characters or killing off secondary characters to make your characters. But now I really do see it more as putting them in uncomfortable situations. Or one of my favorite tricks is when I'm stuck on something, when there's not enough tension, when the pacing is lagging. A lot of times I used to find myself thinking like, oh, this character, whatever they do, like, I guess what I'm saying is as a real person, there are moments in your life where you think a thought and you think, I'm not going to say that because that would go really badly and cause problems. And if you're writing a book, make them say the thing. If it feels true to that character, if they, like, don't let your characters dodge confrontation or tension or saying the wrong thing, because that is the fun of books. When your character asks right. that question that's going to open a can of worms, when they say yes. that thing that's going to cause the argument, like that's kind of what we mean when we say being mean to characters. Put them in situations that force stuff to happen.
I'm thinking again, like Marvel is on the brain. Mm-hmm. Sorry, these. And I think it also hits a broader audience too, totally. Instead of talking about like, you know, a specific book or something. But I'm thinking of the first Iron Man. Mm-hmm. And this is a thing that is not like dialogue. This is not character based. We get to know Tony Stark. He is this full of himself business mogul who doesn't, you know, care about who he hurts. He creates weapons of war. He doesn't care. He cares about the money. He cares about the fame. He cares about the fortune. He flips the peace sign when he's like taking a selfie with the soldiers, right? And then even though he doesn't act, what happens, the situation that he is put in is that he gets all of that stripped away.
Yep.
Literally all of that. He gets bombed. He gets taken to a cave where he has... Like, he barely even has food and water. He doesn't have any of the creature comforts that he's used to. His name means nothing. And if anything, his name means something to the one person in that room that he has hurt.
Yeah.
And that person is there to help him, and he's not used to that. And I think that, like, that is an example of, yes, you hurt Tony, like, you hurt Tony yeah. Stark. You caused a...
But yeah, but it's not the bombing him that's hurting him. It's the...
No.
yeah.
It's the situation totally. that has caused, and that has caused him to make character growth. And if you look, I think, again, if you look at Marvel, and you even told me about watching Pixar movies, mm-hmm. watching Disney movies, Disney films hit that beat almost perfectly. Oh, yeah. And it almost always has, like, not almost always, it always has to do... with character and yeah. things that happen push that character to become the person they need to be by the end.
Absolutely. See, my favorite Iron Man scenes are with Peter Parker.
Yes.
In a similar but a different
character.
Way. Yeah, it's this person who by nature kind of wants to be callous, doesn't want to care, certainly doesn't want to be responsible for someone who is so pure of heart and genuinely enthusiastic. Like, I mean, his opposite in every way. Oh my goodness. Yes. I love that Spider-Man who's out there just like, this is cool. We're superheroes. And to put him with right. the kind of the grumpy mentor type, like, ah, oh, that is one of my,
the crotchety. Like, how much you love character. Oh, you're going back to character and not about plot. Yeah. So I love it. I love it so much.
But making people uncomfortable so often has to yeah. do with other characters. I've always loved the dynamic of the, you know, the grumpy taciturn mentor type and the young enthusiastic, like, sunshine one, because that is being mean to them. This character is like, I don't want to hang out with someone who's peppy and positive. And so you right. shove them together and you're making them uncomfortable. You're being mean to those characters by giving right. them what they actually need. But they right. don't know it yet. The Witcher, I love The Witcher. Like, I mean, again, perfect example of like the plot's great. There's great plot. But man, it's the when you put the big old grumpy monster killer with the peppy little Bart who is singing songs and annoying the heck out of him. Like, that
yes.
is tension. The nice thing to do would be to give him a nice quiet Bart that leaves him alone and gives him personal space and doesn't
right.
push or pry or tease him. But no, that's not what makes a good yeah. story. A good story is nope. making that Witcher uncomfortable.
Yes.
And it is yes. a delight. And I think that's what people respond to. When you ask people about The Witcher, they think of the happy little bard just singing his songs and annoying the heck out of The Witcher.
I mean, is that all they think about?
No. Now we're going back to our original conversation. But yes, totally. Being mean to characters.
And I think that goes back to one of our episodes about like plotting mm-hmm. and having the bones of your story, like having the
yep.
plot itself, like the different bones. And when you ask yourself, how do we get there? How do we get there? Usually it's in character.
Yeah.
Usually it's in character arc. Ask yourself, how does your – not just like how do you get there plot-wise, but how do you get there character-wise? Mm-hmm. How do you get your character into that situation with the mindset you need them to have?
Yeah.
And I just want to preface again, like a lot of this conversation is not happening in the first draft.
No.
If it is
– power to you.
What kind of
– yes, magic.
Hero yes. of writing are you?
Or I think – I really do think that a lot of writers – you know, we talk about plotters and pantsers, which we've talked about before. And I really do think that there can be a very different starting line depending on what kind of writer you are. And I think for me, this is a big part of the reason why I am more of a pantser is because I am such a character-based writer and I can write an outline that tells you everything that's supposed to happen in a story, but that's not the story to me. And so for me, especially, it was a little different with the sequel because I already knew these characters. But when I'm writing a new story, what I'm doing in my first draft is I'm really crafting the character arc. And then, and there's plot, there's other stuff happening too, but it's finessing that who they are in the beginning, who they are in the end, and then putting a plot back on top of it and making sure that things line up. And a huge part of that is pushing them out of their comfort zone. And again, like I love making characters say the thing they shouldn't say, do the thing they shouldn't do. I as a reader, I love those moments where you're like, oh no, honey, no, don't do that, don't do that. I know this is not going to go well for you. And as a writer, when you feel that very human reaction of like, oh, that's a bad idea, make them do the bad idea. Do the bad idea. That is.
Do the bad idea. Yes.
And yeah, I tell people that when I've taught writing courses in the past, when I say, you know, this dialogue is lovely, beautifully written, but what if this character actually said that thing that right now you have as a thought? And I can see the writer be like, oh, but that's going to be so awkward. Yes. Exactly. Make it awkward. That is what we mean about being mean to your characters. It's you can throw bombs at your characters all day long, but if they're a superhero that's just fighting off those bombs and it doesn't faze them, that's fun entertainment, but that's not what's really moving a story forward.
Right.
So if you can pin down what it is that they want, what it is, like, you know, we all want conversations to not be awkward. We all want to avoid fights for the most part. But in a book, if everyone says the right thing and no one ever argues and everyone always makes good decisions and smart choices, then there's nothing happening in your story. And I've seen people say like, oh, YA, man, like the characters are always doing stuff that you know it's a bad idea. And they were saying it like it was a complaint. And I was like, yes, this is why YA is fantastic. Because there's something so fantastic about young characters who are still learning about the world, and so much of learning about the world is making mistakes that, sure, when you're an adult, you look back and you're like, oh, man, like, I knew that was going to end badly. But you didn't know that when you were 15, 16, 17. Or if you did, you thought, nah, it'll be fine. I'll be fine. I got this. And those characters are really fun to root for.
Right. That's what I'm not a fan of. A lot of the time, sometimes it's earned, but a lot of the time when they say, this character kept making bad decisions and I hated it.
Yeah,
and
in reviews. Like,
well, let them make the bad decisions. If they face the consequence of that bad decision, if you were a teenager who did not make bad decisions.
Like, good for you, but you're probably not a main character of a book.
Right? You are not the main character of a YA protagonist. You are not a YA protagonist. Sorry.
And I think that loops back into conversations we've had about character agency, too, is that character, you know, you can have a character that does all the right things and makes all the right choices, but in order then to have a story where lots of stuff is happening, you as the author are probably just going to be throwing a lot of stuff at your character and they're going to be reacting, which is harder to do really well because it can make a character feel passive, feel reactive, feel like they're not driving the story. A lot of times driving the story is allowing characters to make decisions that are going to lead to bad consequences. Even if the decision doesn't necessarily, like, they're not making a decision that is a bad thing to do necessarily, but they're choosing to do something that you as the reader recognize is going to send them into the path of this bad guy, or it's going to, you know, whatever it is.
Right.
Just letting them make choices and letting the character run into the problem instead of the problem run into the character.
And I think that's like the somebody wanted, but
so
then that whole thing. I think a lot of times when we hear that, we think book, somebody wanted, but so then. That's chapter by chapter.
Oh, yeah.
That's scene by scene. Scene by scene, it's somebody wanted in this scene, but this thing happened, so they, and that's the active part. Yes. So they did this.
And it can be huge.
So then they did this.
Or it can be dialogue. Dialogue can be this person wants to befriend this other character, but this character doesn't want to open up to this character. Voila, tension. And now that dialogue is a push-pull. It is one character poking and prying and trying to get the other person to open up, and it is the other character dodging and weaving and trying to avoid those intense connections and those questions. And then suddenly you have active dialogue where both characters are doing things, even though they're just talking to each other.
We are in this. We are in this character conversation. Yes, it is so good.
It is so good. We might just have to just like split it in the middle.
Does that make sense? Have you ever heard a podcast do that?
No, I guess not. Because most of the podcasts I listen to, they'll actually say in the middle, like, okay, we've been talking for too long. We should stop here.
But you and I are like, no, we'll just keep talking. And we'll figure it out in the middle. So it'll be basically like Infinity War, where it's like, we're done. There's the snap. Get out.
Oh, man.
See you next Monday. Everybody's homework is to go home.
And watch all 36 movies.
Well, you're already home, most of you.
Yeah.
That's true. Go watch Iron Man and The Witcher. Yes. So don't watch it with your kids.
No, no, no.
Iron Man, yes. Witcher, no. Watch Witcher alone with a bowl of popcorn.
And then when Shadow and Bone comes out, watch that, but also not with your kids. not with your kids.
What was that noise?
I mean, we don't know. All we know is the rain. No, oh, that's all we know.
That's all we know.
We're gonna swerve. We're gonna swerve away from that topic.
Also, do we know? We still write. Emily, what is your writerly goal what's your just goal for this week? It doesn't have to be a writerly goal. What's your goal? What are you doing?
What is my goal? I think my goal is to keep writing these fun scenes for book two, which it's funny because I say fun scenes. That doesn't necessarily mean that the scenes that like fun stuff is happening in the scenes. Some of the fun scenes are the scenes that are like the most emotionally fraught. But I just really like writing, you know, those juicy character scenes. And I'll work on all the, you know, big battles and epic stuff later. What is your goal for the week?
So it's going to be kind of funny when this episode comes out, because hopefully when this episode comes out, this will be over and done with. But I am finishing up revisions and going to send it to people.
Yeah.
Whole.
Speaking of being mean to characters, it's like being mean to writers. You wrote the thing. Yeah. Now you have to do things with it.
Right. I'm almost done with this revision pass, and then I'm going to go back through and brush up, just kind of like tighten things up and make sure that all the little scenes are there and make sure all the little character arcs are there. And then I'm just going to – this will be the first time that I've ever sent it out to anybody whole.
Yeah.
I've always sent it in pieces, so this is going to be very scary. It's going to be a wine week. Yeah. So there's that.
Yeah, but it's good. It's good. You've done the work. It's exciting.
I'm excited too. It's been a lot of fun to write.
That's
like,
the trick.
You were talking earlier about, man, like,
you gotta lean into the stuff you like. Write the stuff you like. That's a whole.
And I've always kind of done that, but this book has been the one that's like, this is the most off the wall concept I think I've ever done. And I'm very excited.
Those are the concepts. That's what I always tell people. Right? I have a phrase for it that I won't say on our podcast because it doesn't have a rating, but we'll call them the screw it books. And I think there's this, I see it in so many of my writer friends, where they get to this point where they've been working so hard, they've been studying their craft, but for market reasons, for timing reasons, you know, they haven't found an agent or they haven't got that book deal. And there's this like kind of like beautiful chaos moment where writers go, you know what? There's this thing I wanted to write, and I don't even care if it ever is going to work, and I don't care if it's what the market wants, and I'm writing it, and I'm having fun, and I'm putting in the tropes.
I'm writing Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle Rapunzel book if I want to.
But it's really that like leaning into the tropes you like and the dynamics you like and just having fun with it. It's not a guarantee. Of course it's not. But there's a magic that happens in books where you just go, I'm doing the thing that I love to read, that I want to read, and it is just, it's so rewarding. And a lot of times those books are the ones that resonate with readers for reasons that they don't understand, but it's that indefinable something.
Well, let's hope my book has that, because it has it for me. I'm enjoying it.
And well, that's the nice thing, too, is then it's like, regardless of what happens with the book, at least you got to have fun. Like, I remember with TLF, with The Last Semester, when I was drafting it, thinking, you know what, I don't know. I don't know if this book is going to fit with the market. I don't know if this is what agents or editors are looking for. But at least I will have it because I wrote the book I wanted to read. And honestly, this is sort of embarrassing. I read it for fun. I read my own book for fun. I love it. It is the book I wanted to read. I wrote the book I wanted to read. And even if it had never gone anywhere, which would have broken my heart, I would still have that book. I would still have my happy book. The book that I...
That's my favorite thing. Great. Every time you talk about reading your book again, I love it so much because so many people are like, oh, I'm not... I'm done
I know.
This
yeah, and I've definitely had those points. You know, there's a certain point in revision where you're like, if I never see this again, it's going to be too soon. But this book just always pulls me back in. And It is going to be hard because I know once it's printed, I am a fiddler. I like to fiddle. It's going to be hard to read it knowing that, yes, there are going to be lines, there are going to be words that I'm going to wish I could change them. But I honestly do think I'm going to pick up that darn hardcover book and sit down and read it because I actually do. I love those characters so much that I am often able to skip over my editor brain and just read it like a reader and enjoy it. And if that makes thee the dorkiest dork ever, then so be it. I hope readers feel the same way.
We know what we're about.
Yep, that's true.
We know. We're dorks. We know it.
Yeah. So let's hope readers feel the same way. Let's hope early readers feel the same way. And yeah, by the time this episode comes out, people may have read it. It's not going to be on shelves yet, but we're just getting to the point in the publishing process where it is starting to perhaps venture beyond my agent and my editor and myself, which is exciting.
It is very exciting.
And I'm realizing, too, it's really the first time that anyone is reading it that I'm not in control of. So it's a weird thing to say. Obviously, people I don't know have read it. When I queried it, I didn't know those agents, but I sent it to them. Like, it came from me. It went from me. It went to agents. When we went on submission, obviously, my agent and I, we had talked about our submission list. So I didn't know those editors, but I knew my agent was sending it to those editors. And I'm realizing that I'm getting to the point that it's going to land in inboxes of people that I might not know they're getting it until they say something on Twitter or Goodreads. And that is a wild thought, just to be like, oh, it's got a life of its own now. Like, that's cool.
That's exciting. Yes. You're reaching the part where it's like, I wrote a book and I can't wait for people to read it. When people are reading it, oh no, people are reading my book. Like, you're reaching that point where it's like, I can't wait for people to read my book. Oh wait, people are going to read my book.
Absolutely. The weirdest dynamic of writerdom is the combination of being like, I love this book. People are going to love this book. Oh no, people are going to read this book. What if they don't love this book? But that is just part of the deal. Because once it is a book, it is not my book anymore. It is the reader's book. Yee!
I'm excited.
All right. So we're not going to do.
Do we have any other surprises?
No,
because by the time this episode comes out, all our surprises will be good.
We got a lot of very cool people who have signed up to be guests.
Yay! So it's going to be a lot of fun. I can't wait to talk to all these people. It's going to be great.
And now you have to turn an hour and a half of recording into an episode. Good luck with that.
It's magic. it's really good until, you know, like two nights before the podcast comes out. And I'm like, oh, I haven't edited that yet.
Which would be tonight, right? Because we have an episode dropping on Monday and it's Saturday.
So I gotta go.
So we just gotta go.
This has been fun. Bye-bye. We have to cut this short.
Roll credits.
Get out of here. Hello, friends. Thank you for listening to another episode of Basic Pitches. We super appreciate you listening and supporting this podcast and being as excited about it as we are. Remember to rate and review it on iTunes. It really helps us out reach a broader audience, especially considering we answered a question about rating and reviewing books. If you like this podcast, let people know about it. Give it a little 5-star click if that's all you got the time for. We'd super appreciate it. Remember to add The Last Fenestra on Goodreads. Remember to check out Jelly Nell on Etsy. That is JELLYNELL, all one word. Excellent stickers, excellent jewelry. She made our cover art. I will be hyping her until the day I die. I'm trying to think if there's anything else. Yes, we have lots of exciting guests coming up. It's going to be fun. It's going to be awesome. Remember, if you have questions, you can leave us a voice message on our anchor link. You'll see that on Twitter. You can also email us at basicpitchespodcast@gmail.com. So send any questions, any episode ideas, anything like that. You can send to our email or you can leave us a voice message and we'll get back to you. All right, pitches. I think that's it. Bye.